Okay, we're back at it.
How about them Cowboys? Yeah.
It's only one Oklahoma, and it was state. And it was state.
We are back at it. Welcome back to another edition of the Pistols Firing Podcast. I'm Carson Cunningham, joined as always by Colby Powell. Colby, happy Friday to you. March Madness is in full swing. One of the best, Thursday, Fridays of the year underway.
Yeah, I don't know how much I'm going to get to watch today, but I got to watch a lot yesterday. Hung out with some friends and watched quite a bit. And then last night, we are childless for a couple of days as she spent some time with grandparents. So watched almost the entirety of that Oakland-Kentucky game. And that was just an epic, classic March Madness. It made me a little nostalgic for the college basketball of my youth, where a 14 seed has a kid get crazy hot, hits 10 threes, and the 3 seed puckers up and mighty Kentucky falls again. So yesterday was a lot of fun.
Few greater things than Calipari crashing out of the tournament for me. I just constantly a disappointment despite all the NBA players he's had, and just couldn't happen to a better guy.
I think everybody is just kind of, I don't want to say annoyed or over the Calipari thing. It's just, he's been there for a long time now. It's been a long time since they've been successful. He said that they're going to mold some changes after this most recent exit. Same thing that Tony Bennett said after they scored like 14 points in an entire game in the first four. And I actually think I root harder against Tony Bennett because I think he ruins basketball by trying to take 29 seconds off the shot clock every possession and just slow the game down to a 38-37 slog. But I don't root much for Calipari either. So the kid from Oakland last night that went bananas, he was fun to watch. He was just, a couple of those were deep heat checks, and it was great college basketball.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Not sure everyone's brackets are doing, but this show is brought to you by Chris's University Spirit, your one-stop cowboy shop. Be sure to shop at chrisuniversityspirit.com. Marshall Scott put together a Pistols Firing bracket pool, and the winner will get some merch from either Pistols Firing or Chris's. So we appreciate Chris's throwing out some swag for the winners in that pool. This is probably, Colby, the least college basketball. I say this every year, but this year was even worse than the previous years about my lack of watching college basketball for all the reasons you and I have discussed so many times, just the style of play and players not sticking around, all the reasons everyone knows. So I once again filled out my bracket, much like the man Rick Gaiman, Rick Rungood on Twitter and YouTube. He does it based on math, the probabilities versus how many people are picking teams, and kind of go the opposite way. It's kind of just a leverage situation. Didn't go so great yesterday. Had BYU and Texas Tech in the Elite Eight, both lost. But to show that his method is pretty sharp, I'm in the 89th percentile. I got a little fire emoji next to my ESPN bracket, and I'm in the top four in the Pistols firing group. So since I didn't watch any basketball, I just went to the math and probabilities and leverage.
Yes, I filled my bracket out very quickly this year, probably the least research I've ever done. And yesterday I got off to the hottest start I've ever gotten off to. I was 8-0 yesterday after the first wave of games. I had both the 11-6 upsets. I picked BYU to lose on the simple logic of they lost a game to Oklahoma State this year. If you can lose to Oklahoma State this year, you can probably lose to anybody in the country. So that method was strong. And then I picked Oregon probably in the Sweet 16. And my logic there was, I feel like every year nobody watches Oregon because they play all their games in the middle of the night out on the West Coast. And then they go to the Sweet 16. So I had Oregon as well. And then the wheels came off last night. So I started 8-0. I finished the day 10-6, and I lost three Elite Eight teams and a Final Four team. So I had Kentucky coming out of that region. I had McNeese in the Elite Eight because why not? And then I can't even remember who my other Elite Eight team was that I lost. I'm not sure. I had Samford beating Kansas, which almost happened. And Carson, I don't know about you. I was shocked to see that Kansas benefited from a friendly whistle. They usually don't get a good whistle. So I'm glad that Kansas finally got a big call in a big moment to go their way.
I mean, just of course, right? Just a total gift. I mean, college basketball's got enough issues, and then the officiating does that. Like, the end of the games just take forever. They review everything, and they didn't review that. That was a frustrating end of the day. But I only had Tech in the Sweet 16. I needed to correct myself. So my Elite Eight was UConn over BYU, Marquette over Duke, Tennessee over Gonzaga. I always bet against Purdue, and then Arizona over Alabama. I've got Michigan State beating North Carolina next round, which I'm feeling pretty good about. But just, again, I don't watch any of these teams. I just picked it on probabilities versus how many people are picking them. And again, Colby, I can't wait to watch these Big Ten teams crash out early again, Purdue especially.
Yeah, Purdue, I think I've got them losing to Utah State in the second round, and our good buddy Danny Sprinkle. Last week we had our conversation with Kyle Boone, and we talked about these coaches, a lot of whom were in the tournaments, and we're talking up how great of candidates these are. So I feel like I advanced all those teams further. Like, I had Drake going a couple of rounds. I had McNeese in the Elite Eight. I had Utah State, I think I've gotten the Sweet 16. So yeah, if we talked about the coach last week on the pod, I probably had a little sweet spot for that team and advanced them a little bit further.
Well, it's weird because, and we're going to rank our top three candidates. It's weird though. Like, I kind of want them to lose in the first round just so, one, that they don't make this deep run and prolong the process, but two, that could create a bidding war. You know, there's some big jobs out there. Michigan's open. Oklahoma State's going to be going head to head with West Virginia if they do want DeVries and some of those other people. So part of me wants them to lose early. So I picked Drake to lose. I didn't want them. I picked Utah State to lose. And that was more of the probabilities in the numbers that I ran. But also, I think that would benefit Oklahoma State because it's pretty clear, Colby. We haven't heard much of anything at all because it's become rather obvious that Chad Weiberg's targeting someone who's still playing in the NCAA tournament.
Oh, yeah, I think so, too, because, you know, there have been some, they might be targeting this guy, they might be targeting this guy, but I haven't, like, there have been no rumblings that I've heard of, like, actual, this is the 1, 2, 3 guys that they're talking to, trying to get in here. Like, I think it's pretty obvious that whoever they're going to want to get or go after is still in the tournament. And I still expect it to be one of these younger up and coming head coaches at the mid major level. I think that makes way too much sense for where Oklahoma State is at a program right now. And yeah, if any of those teams go on a second weekend run and that's your guy, then that delays it. And that gets more teams interested and probably raises the price tag a little bit. So while you want a guy to have that success coming in, you also want to, you want to get your guy at your price. So it's kind of a catch 22 as far as who you're looking at in the tournament and how far they go.
Yeah. And I think price will be a factor in this. Look, OSU paid a ton of money to get rid of Mike Boynton. So we'll have to see, you know, what kind of coach they can get for the right salary. I mean, you know, ESPN, really the only outlet I've seen report what's really going on. There's been a lot of candidate talk throughout the local, you know, affiliates and publications, but ESPN said, quote, OSU doesn't seem to have dialed in on any particular candidate, but that could change depending on who becomes available. Some names linked to the job are Western Kentucky Steve Lutz. I think it's Lutz. Nico Medved from Colorado State. Darian DeVries, who I mentioned the day that Mike Boynton was fired. I got to pat myself on the back a little bit there. Northwest Missouri State's Ben McCollum, who's just won huge at a lower level. And then Washington State's Kyle Smith and Danny Sprinkle from Utah State, but the latter two seem more likely to land elsewhere, according to ESPN. And that's kind of the latest from ESPN. And I did want to kind of get into this, Colby. I mean, we've had, you know, a week or so to kind of reach out to folks and read stuff. And you mentioned there hadn't been a whole lot of smoke. I think the most smoke I've seen is Danny Sprinkle's name keeps popping up. I think a big portion of the fan base likes DeVries. And there's also been some smoke from, I believe, the Tulsa World about Steve Alford being potentially interested in the Oklahoma State job. And not great timing for Alford, considering he just gave up a 17-point lead to Dayton last night. Kind of a rough way to try to campaign for a job at Oklahoma State. I want to get into our top three candidates, Colby, but that's kind of the latest. The most smoke we've heard from are those three names.
Yeah, and Danny Sprinkle, again, we talked about him a good bit with Kyle Boone last week, the coach from Utah State. They're an 8 seed, and if they win today, I think they could beat Purdue. I'm never a Purdue believer until they do it with Hagrid in there at center. I'm just not a believer that they're going to get it done.
Hagrid.
That's what he is. And I just – I don't know that he's as realistic for Oklahoma State. Kyle mentioned the Washington job being open, him being a West Coast guy. I think that that probably makes some more sense. But DeVries, I did find out that it is pronounced DeVries. I heard Seth Davis talking about the pronunciation. So Darian DeVries at Drake. That would be a good one. They lost to Washington State last night, so they are out now. I think he would certainly be popular. Yeah, I think that that's much more realistic than Danny Sprinkle in on my list at this point.
Yeah, that's good stuff. And yeah, we don't know the level of interest from a guy like Danny Sprinkle, but let's rank the candidates. You want to start three and go to one? Let's do that. I think that leaves a little bit more suspense. My third, I had a two-way tie for third on my ranking of the head coaching candidates for Oklahoma State basketball. I liked what I saw out of Bucky Ball last night. I'm not going to lie. Bucky McMillan, the coach of Samford, got completely hosed by the referees, as everyone's want to do when they face Kansas. He's only 40 years old, started out as a high school coach, but they play in-your-face, pressure, high-flying, run basketball, a.k.a. Bucky Ball. That would be thoroughly entertaining. He's a young guy, which I think would, you know, he would bring a lot of energy into the program. And I liked what I saw. A lot of praise for him from the likes of Sam Vecini, a very sharp basketball mind, was posting videos of some of his out of bounds plays. That's certainly encouraging, shows his coaching acumen. So I really liked what I saw from Bucky McMillan. He climbs into my top three, but he's tied with Steve Lutz, and I need a pronunciation guides for all these names. He's kind of an up-and-comer with Western Kentucky, got them into the tournament for the first time since 2013. And again, I think these two, Colby, that come in at number three, and the number one reason is style of play. And they've obviously had success at the level that they're at. But listen to this about Lutz. Are we going Lutz or Lutz, Colby, so just so we're consistent?
Will Lutz in the NFL is pronounced Lutz with the same spelling, so I think we go Lutz.
Okay, Steve Lutz. While the Hilltoppers don't have many standout qualities, either good or bad, in the advanced analytics, there's one stat that tells you how they play under Lutz. Western Kentucky ranks number one in the nation in adjusted tempo per Ken Palm. For context, Alabama's number nine, Kentucky is number 10. On average, the Hilltoppers take 14.6 seconds per offensive possession, which is the fourth shortest amount in the country. Western Kentucky also does a majority of its scoring from inside the three-point arc. Only 25% of their points come via three-pointers. That's 310th in the nation, while 56.4% of their points come via two-point field goals, which is 34th in the nation. After watching college athletes shoot nothing but bricks from the three-point line and try to play an NBA style when they don't have the shooting acumen, that's right in my wheelhouse. And the pace of play from both of these, Colby, would, I think, get Gallagher Iba on its feet, would be thoroughly entertaining, and they both have been proven winners at their level they're currently at. So those are why those two both are on my number three on my candidate list and why I think they'd be successful at Oklahoma State.
I am not going to comment because we're going to have some overlap. So I'm going to start on my list. Yeah, I'm going to start on my list. And this, it's hard to say how you want to rank these guys because I am factoring style of play in here. Like, it, from an entertainment standpoint, I want an entertaining product. I want a team that's getting up and down the floor, that's playing fast. Whatever the opposite of Tony Bennett, that is what I want. So call me recency bias for the pick that I'm going with here at number three on my list. But it's a guy who just made Tony Bennett look like a clown, which is what Tony Bennett is. And that's Nico Medved at Colorado State. They had the first four game against Virginia on Tuesday evening, and Colorado State just absolutely let Virginia have it. They didn't fall into the trap of playing that crazy style that just makes basketball not look like basketball. They're top 50 nationally in adjusted offensive efficiency, adjusted defensive efficiency. They're good on both ends. They're top 10 in the country in two-point field goal percentage. They just are solid, all around solid. They did not play great last night against Texas. They just couldn't get anything to go. And I know that if anybody watched that game last night, they're probably rolling their eyes at this selection. I think Colorado State scored like 11 points in the first half. It was brutal. But it's college basketball. It happens from time to time. I love what I saw Tuesday. I love the overall profile of how Colorado State plays the game on both ends of the floor. And I'm going to go Nico Medved at number three.
Yeah, I like him. I just don't think he's had nearly the consistency. He just spent 1 year at Drake when they went 500. He has won 20 games in four of the last 5 years, but he did go 15-18 last year. Here's his finishes in the Mountain West. T7, T5, third, second, T8, T6. Not exactly lighting it up in the Mountain West, which is not a great basketball conference, but I like him. I have no other issues with that, but that's probably why he didn't make my top three, are those reasons I just listed.
Yeah, those are fair critiques. Again, some of it could be recency bias. I did watch the Colorado State Virginia game on Tuesday night and just loved everything Colorado State did to Virginia, because I hate what Virginia basketball is and what it represents. They're the Iowa of college basketball, as we were getting sent those shirts on Twitter throughout the week. So probably some recency bias for me from watching that game the other night, but your critiques are valid.
Yeah. And I really struggle with my one and two. I think you could interchange these two. I've changed them twice in the last week as far as who I rank one and who I rank two. I think I'm going to go sprinkle two. I've had him number one this entire time, and this is the one reason. First, let's start with the positive. I mean, the guy took over a program with no inherited players. He had to bring in 13 players his first year, which is this year at Utah State, and all he did was win his conference. There's a lot of smoke out there. He likes Oklahoma State. I wonder how much of that is trying to get a bigger contract out of Utah State. He's only been there 1 year, so he's not deeply rooted there. He's a Montana State alum, where he left his alma mater to go to Utah State. A lot of smoke with him in Washington because his dad played football there. I don't know how, if he likes this part of the country or if he wants to stay near the West Coast, but you just continue to hear Sprinkle's name when it comes to Oklahoma State. I think there's a lot of reasons why Chad Weiberg would like him. I think he would be an absolute home run. Let me make that clear. I think Sprinkle is 1B to my 1A on the coaching candidates, but this is the one thing that kind of gives me a little pause. He's only been there one season, maybe caught lightning in a bottle with one portal, 1 year of the portal. But here's the deal about Utah State. They've won 26 or more games four times in the past six seasons with three different coaches, advancing to the NCAA tournament each time. That makes me wonder, is this a product of being at a great basketball program in Utah State? Or is this Danny Sprinkle's ascension continuing and he looks like the guy for Oklahoma State? That's the one thing that gives me pause about Danny Sprinkle, Colby, but that's a very minor worry, especially given where Oklahoma State is, given their status quo. I sound a little nitpicky here, but if I have to decide on one versus two, that's the one reason I'm leaning another direction.
Yeah, I don't blame you on that. And for that reason, and so that we can have some diversity in our lists, I left him off my list. I do think he's going to stay out West after talking to Boone last week. I think he would be a great get for Oklahoma State. If they get Danny Sprinkle, I would be very excited. I left him off my top three so that we could have a little bit of diversity. But at number two, I'm going to go with a coach that you had at one of your T3s. Bucky Ball, baby. I love me some Bucky Ball. I love the pace. I picked Samford to beat Kansas last night. Again, that whistle, it was a great play, and it was robbed. But that's part of playing against Kansas. You have to accept that it's 8-on-5. And I love the Bucky Ball. I love the 93-89 last night, even in the loss. They're top 10 nationally in average possession length, top 15 in adjusted tempo. They force a lot of turnovers. They get a lot of steals. It's fast-paced. It's in your face. It's getting up and down the floor. Like, that's what I want to watch. When I go to Gallagher-Iba Arena, I want to watch a team that is just running, getting into their bench. They had 45% of their minutes were bench minutes because you've got guys out there. And when they're out there, they are going hard every second that they're on the floor. And that is fun to watch. And I love the idea of that kind of entertaining product and bringing that style to the Big 12 and making teams deal with you just constantly sending bodies at them over and over again. You know, my wife and I watch a lot of hockey, and Bucky McMillan almost seems like he runs that kind of style where you've just got your different lines and you're in shifts and you're just rotating constantly on and off. I love it. I love Bucky McMillan. I love the way he plays. I think it would be a very entertaining style in the Big 12, and I've got him at number two on my list.
Yeah, and the only pushback I would give on him, and the reason he's at three and not higher, is he's only been a head coach. This is his fourth season. But again, he's gone 15-3 in his conference last year's T1 and then winning it outright this year. I do wonder, just 4 years as a head coach in the Southern Conference versus the conferences that Danny Sprinkle is in and the conference that my number one coach is in. That's the only thing I would push back on a little bit about Bucky and why I don't think Chad Weiberg will hire him.
Yeah, those are fair. It's a style of play pick for me, and they've been successful with that style, right? They got to the tournament. I know McCullough's out, but even when McCullough out, they still pushed Kansas to the brink. He's doing that with Samford level athletes. So I understand not the longest resume and the level of competition is a bit lower, but I would still be very excited with this hire because I would be excited to watch Oklahoma State get up and down the floor.
Yep, that would be that'd be a lot of fun. And again, I think you get Gallagher Iba rocking with that style of play, you can go on some serious runs that would kind of harken back to the old days for sure. It would be a fun, young, exciting hire. I just think Chad's going to go with a more proven coach, and that leads me to number one on my list. Again, him and Sprinkle, I think, are home runs. And that's Darian DeVries, who I mentioned again the day that Mike Boynton was fired, as kind of the prototypical type of hire I think Chad Weiberg should make. I think there'll be no shortage of suitors. I think West Virginia is hot on his heels. I think he'll have Michigan contacting him because, again, he's been the head coach at Drake since 2018. He finished tied for first his first season there. His finishes in conference, and again, in the Missouri Valley Conference, which is for me, one of the premier mid-major conferences in college basketball, has been for a very long time. He's proven himself in this conference versus, you know, the Southern Conference and some others. First season, T1, eighth, second, T2, second, second. And he's made the NCAA tournament the past 2 years, three of the last four. Wait, I thought he had won the conference. Is this standing wrong on here? I thought he had won their conference. Maybe Wikipedia is wrong. He's won back-to-back Missouri Valley Conference championships. So never trust Wikipedia. Appearances in four straight conference tournament title games. Maybe they're factoring in the tournament on Wikipedia. But he's won back-to-back conference titles in the Missouri Valley. His son is an elite player. That's one thing that gives me – people were fired up about that. Like, yeah, it'd be great to get him for a year. Apparently he has eligibility left. But, like – the only thing that makes me slightly concerned about him is he riding his son to these records? I think his son's going to end up playing in the NBA. He's that good. But make no mistake, if they were to get to DeVries, I think he would win big in Stillwater. I think he would return Oklahoma State to respectability immediately. He had to replace 10 guys this year, so he's no stranger to overhauling a roster. So, Colby, he just checks every single box for me. 150-54 is his overall record, six straight seasons of 20 wins. I mean, I think as much as I'm intrigued by Sprinkle, and again, I still think he would be a home run, I just think DeVries is far more proven at a place that is not as easy to win as Utah State.
Yeah, the consistency over a good period of time is why Darian DeVries comes in at number one on my list. I figured we were going to be in lockstep here. We both left out Dusty May, which I think is good. I think he's going to Michigan or Louisville. He's actually getting beat right now by Northwestern, so we'll see what happens there with Dusty May. But the consistency at Drake is phenomenal. They're top 40 in the country in pretty much every offensive statistic, top 15 in turnover percentage. They don't turn it over a ton. Decent three-point shooting team, solid free throw shooting team. And I don't necessarily have concerns about his son potentially coming in for a year and then leaving. And is that why he's been successful? Like you said, six seasons of 20-plus wins. Also, guess who's been coaching Little DeVries since he was a kid? His dad, and he's developed him into an NBA talent. So that does not give me really any pause in that situation. I think that he would be a home run for Oklahoma State. And like you said, the ability to overhaul a roster, to just kind of adapt to what college basketball is now. I think we've seen Darian DeVries do that and continue to be successful year after year at Drake, which, like you said, is in the premier mid-major conference in the country. It's there's a lot of good teams that come out of that conference every year in the tournament that give some Power Five programs fits. And yeah, I think he would be a home run. So Darian DeVries comes in at number one on both of our lists, and I think that's where he should be. He's solid.
So who do you think Chad will hire if you had to wager on it?
If I had to wait, I would think if DeVries doesn't get another job, I think he's going to be Oklahoma State's priority. I think that they are looking for someone who is a consistent proven winner at that level. And who's a consistent proven winner at that level? It's DeVries. Again, the pace and space of Buckyball would be great. The other guys that we mentioned would be great. There's some candidates that I don't think are as realistic. I don't think that Dusty May's coming, and I don't think Weiberg would go after Buzz Williams, a guy who's well into his Power 5 career and would kind of be a retread at this point. I don't think you're looking for a retread. I think you're looking for the next guy, and I think DeVries could be that. I think that's who Chad's got his eyes on, and his season's over as of last night, so maybe we'll start to hear some more rumblings coming up here pretty soon, but I think that's who Chad's going to go after, and I think it would be a home run.
Yeah, I mean, guys like Buzz Williams, he's making $3.8 million a year. Oklahoma State is not in a position to pay their basketball coach $4 million a year. And I don't think Buzz Williams is going to crawl to Stillwater to make less money than he's making at A&M. So I agree with you. And again, that's something that's very encouraging to me about DeVries is he's going to be relatively cheap, much like Brad Underwood was. I mean, I think the research I've done, DeVries only makes $334,000 a year. You know, that's... You know, that's that dog will hunt in terms of a program that doesn't have just, you know, coffers of cash laying around to pay a basketball coach. Not only is he a proven winner. No, of course, you're not going to pay him that. You're going to probably up it to around $1 million. But you juxtapose that with $4 million, you would have to pay a guy like Buzz Williams. That's just for me, another box that DeVries checks. It's just a matter of, does he value the Oklahoma State job? Has it fallen so far that he would choose to go to, let's say, West Virginia? And again, I know West Virginia is supposedly well ahead in the NIL game when it comes to basketball, but how much of that, Colby, is a product of 7 years of ineptitude? One tournament in 7 years. Supposedly some donors came through on the buyout. Who's to say donors won't be like lining up to help fund NIL and basketball to get Oklahoma State basketball where it is. It's a very prideful fan base at Oklahoma State when it comes to hoops. We were a basketball school for a very long time. It's hard to remember these days, but we were. I was there. It was unbelievable. The passion still runs deep. I know it does for Chad, which I've discussed before. I think that's just another box that DeVries checks, Colby, that he's going to be affordable on top of, you know, being the most proven guy. It's just, how does he value Oklahoma State as a program? To me, that's going to be the most fascinating question. I think that will ultimately decide if he ends up in Stillwater.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think the sooner that you can get something done and get your guy in, again, if your guy's still coaching, he makes the second weekend and that's what you want to do, I totally understand. But I think the sooner the better. I mean, we've already seen Javon Small either is or isn't in the portal, but kind of seems like he is. And Brandon Garrison is for sure in the portal. I mean, I think it's important to get a guy on campus and let the players that are there now start to get to know a new coach and decide if they want to play for that guy and start to get into roster construction for next season. The portal is going to be a highly competitive place this offseason, as it has been every year for the last few. And I think it's important to get it going as soon as possible. So if it is DeVries or if it is someone who's not coaching right now, I would really like to see that hire and that news come down next week. I don't think you want to drag it out any longer than absolutely necessary. The sooner you can get it done, get a new guy in town and start putting a roster together for next season, I think the better.
Yeah, that's important to note that Brandon Garrison is in the portal. He's number one ranked player in the portal. That's just the level of talent he is as a former McDonald's All-American. Of course, the opposing coaches raved about him every time they played Oklahoma State. So that doesn't come much of a surprise to me. And really, same with Javon Small. Like, the fact that, you know, both those guys are in the portal doesn't surprise me. It wouldn't surprise me if almost all of the players end up in the portal. They came here to play for Mike Boynton. I'm looking at who Brandon Garrison follows on Twitter. He only has 200. He only follows like 200 people, so it's easy to skim through. Chris Beard at Mississippi. That's concerning. Texas men's basketball, also concerning. So it appears that, you know, he's already playing the portal game and guys are probably coming after him. I don't know why he would be following Chris Beard, just randomly like that. So that's fascinating. But I wasn't surprised these guys are in the portal, and I really don't blame him, frankly.
I wonder if, cause you don't know when he followed these people in these programs. So I wonder if he followed Chris Beard and Texas at the same time when Chris Beard was at Texas, like if that's an old follow, that for whatever reason. And in the recruiting process, he he had some draw there with Coach Beard, but yeah, I think it's important that you get these guys back, and I don't expect Garrison will be back. And Small, like, I get it. These are guys that have been in Stillwater for a year, right? Like, they don't have this deep-rooted connection to Stillwater and to Oklahoma State. And if they're not prepared to give another guy a chance and go through a potential – I mean, I don't even know if you call it a rebuild at this point in college athletics with how quickly things turn over with the portal these days. But if they didn't enjoy the amount of losing they did this year and their experience in Stillwater and they want to go do it somewhere else, that's totally fine. I think what Kyle Boone said last week when he was on with us was right on the money. Like, you can turn a roster over in a year, and no, Brandon Garrison's don't grow on trees, but if you bring in the right coach running the right system with his guys, then you can have success pretty much I don't know if I want to say immediately, but somewhat quickly, more quickly than you probably used to be able to turn over a program. So would love to have these guys back and see what they could look like under a different coach. But if they move on, I would totally understand all the reasoning why and wish them best of luck in their next stop.
Yeah, I would echo that sentiment. And again, I mean, there's a chance that I think that's another reason Chad Weiberg wants to move fast. I think now that, you know, DeVries is out of the tournament, we'll have to see on Sprinkle. I think that'll certainly speed up the process. And I think, you know, if he hires a hot name like that, like a Sprinkle or DeVries, like, they're going to get a chance to re-recruit these guys. And I think, you know, that's certainly another reason for Chad Weiberg to move rather quickly. So I think this will get hammered out really quickly if Sprinkle were to lose tonight.
Yeah, I think so too. I think that, I don't know. We will probably need to be on standby next week for an emergency pod is what I'm thinking.
Yeah, I'm down for that. And again, these things move quickly, and the introductory press conference, no matter who it is, I think would be sometime next week. So we'll have to, you know, unless, you know, Sprinkle makes it to the Final Four. Like, if we're still sitting here and it's about to be the Final Four and OSU doesn't have a coach, I think you can go ahead and say that Chad Weiberg and Danny Sprinkle have come to an agreement.
Yeah, I think so. And look, I don't think Utah State is going to make the Final Four. I do think, again, we've echoed the sentiment many times. If you were going to get one of the one seeds, Purdue is the one that you wanted. So I think that they got a pretty good draw. They've got Kansas without McCullough in that region. Gonzaga looked like a monster yesterday against McNeese. So I don't know how far Utah State's going to go. They could lose today in the 8-9. But yeah, if he's still around for a while, then that's probably what's happening. But I don't expect that to be the case. I expect, even if it is him, that they might get knocked out this weekend. But regardless, I think next week is the time.
Yep, I agree. So that's the latest on basketball. NCAA wrestling's going on right now. OSU got off to a really good start, but Colby, they have fallen way back. I think there's three guys alive to try and win an individual national championship, and I think people are getting a little restless when it comes to Oklahoma State wrestling. It's not only just the results, Colby. I think the style of wrestling is starting to wear on people. Very little offense, very little aggression. I watched Dayton Fix narrowly escape in overtime today in his quarterfinal. So he does survive, and he's still alive for a national championship. And that's basically where the rooting interest will lie. It's just resorting back to individuals because they're frankly just not on Penn State's level and haven't been for a very long time now.
Yeah, and it's tough for me as I'm not a diehard Oklahoma State wrestling fan, right? Like, I observe it from the outside. I loved going to the duels whenever I was in college, but it's hard to get up to Stillwater with a kid on the weekends and watch wrestling. And so I observe it from a distance. And from a distance, growing up, I just knew it was automatic. Like, Oklahoma State was one of the best wrestling programs in the country. And you look now, and I mean, they still kind of are, but it's a sport that is so top heavy with the top really one, maybe two programs in the country. And for a long time, that was Oklahoma State. And now it's just not. And I think it's jarring for Oklahoma State fans. And I think it kind of taints what success looks like when forever the bar, the measure of success was national championship or bust. And that's just no longer reasonable or realistic because they're not the best team in the country. And they're a good bit below the best team in the country. So, I don't know if I want to compare Oklahoma State wrestling to Oklahoma football, but like, OU football fans have been trying to convince themselves for a decade that they're still the same tier as what Alabama and Georgia and for a stretch there Clemson were for the last decade. And they're just not. They're just in that next tier below. And I think that's kind of where Oklahoma State wrestling is right now. It's like, we all still want to tell ourselves, hey, this program is the program that it was 20 years ago and 30 years ago. And maybe it's just not. Maybe it's just that next tier down. And maybe that changes what success looks like for Oklahoma State wrestling year in and year out. So it's a tough pill to swallow. You want to be the best team in the country. You want to win the national championships. But I don't know. At some point, do the expectations have to get rewired to where you're just trying to win a Big 12 championship every year and maybe have an individual or two win a natty, but you know you're not going to win the team competition. So that's the realistic fan side of me coming out. You'd love to be the national champion every year, but that's just not where this program is right now.
Yeah, I mean, after session two, Penn State number one with 34.5 points, Oklahoma State all the way down at T10 with just 14. That's just kind of where they're at now. I mean, it's and I think there's gonna be a lot of questions about John Smith moving forward. And look, he's the GOAT, like all the plaudits, like all the caveats, all the qualifiers on John Smith. You just question what's the future of Oklahoma State wrestling at this point. I know they brought in Coleman Scott from North Carolina, obviously a former Cowboy great himself. Seems like a kind of a head coach in waiting type situation, given he was already a proven head coach at this level. Curious to see what happens there, if anything happens. I mean, John may still want to coach another 10 years for all I know, and he certainly earned that right. I just think there's going to be continuous questions now about Oklahoma State, because this was a very, very disappointing NCAA. It's to only have three guys make it to the quarterfinals.
Oh, yeah, for sure. With the way that this season started and just how hot they were really from, I mean, the start of the season up until the Iowa duel, and then they lose to Iowa, and then they don't win the Big 12 championship, and now they're way down the leaderboard at Nationals. Like, it has certainly been a very disappointing end to the season. Fair to compare it a little bit to the way Oklahoma softball season transpired in 2023?
Sorry, I was reading an email. What was your question?
No, it's just, is it fair to compare this year's wrestling season to last year's softball season, where you start hot, you feel like you've got one of the best teams in the country, they can't seem to lose, and then right at the end, it just you get a whole lot of losing right at the end? Is that a fair comparison or no?
Pretty fair, yeah. Yeah, I mean, shoot, they were ranked second in the country, just like Oklahoma State softball was. It's just, it's a different format, right? That's kind of the difference. It's, you know, they're doing duels. Now this is just a huge bracket at each weight class. It's every man for himself, and it contributes to the team title. That's just the way the sport's always worked. So it's very disappointing. And again, I'm no expert. I'm not calling for John Smith's job. I just think at this point, it's kind of a fair question, his status with wrestling and where they're currently at, because the gap between Penn State is not closing. It's only widening. And right now, you're trying to be good as Iowa State, who's T2 with 24.5 points. You're sitting there at 14, let alone Penn State. So that's concerning for Oklahoma State wrestling for sure. How about some positive news, Colby?
I love positive news.
Ready for an uplift here? The Hall of Fame, the Hall of Honor class for Oklahoma State 2024 has been announced. The headliners are Brandon Whedon and Charles Howell III. That should come to no surprise that those two guys are in there. Of course, Brandon, you know what Brandon did at Oklahoma State, and Charles Howell was kind of Tiger-esque in college. I mean, three-time All-American, a part of the national title team in 2000. He won the Haskins and the Jack Nicklaus Award in 2000, won three PGA Tour events as well. But he was pretty electric, and joining them are Lauren Bay from softball, David Edwards from golf, Ross Flood from wrestling, James Wadley from tennis, Davey Perry track, John Perry track, Jim Metcalf track, Tom Von Ruden track, which grows OSU's Hall of Honor to 87. It was announced on Thursday. So big deal for Brandon and Charles, who I assume will be on hand for the festivities.
Yeah, no doubt. It's great to have those guys in there. Chucky Three Sticks as one of his nicknames. He's probably got a few. He was a notorious range rat throughout his entire career, just going to the range and just hitting golf balls just on repeat over and over for hours and hours and hours. And he made himself a really good player, not a prolific winner, but a guy who just always, I mean, you can make a hell of a career out of spending what he was probably 20 plus years on the PGA Tour before he went to LIV, where he just finished, I don't know, T17th, T29, T8 every week and didn't do a lot of winning, but just kept his card for two decades, which is so hard to do. I mean, you eat what you kill on the PGA Tour, and he was out there getting after it for a long, long time and a really good player. Another name that a lot of people probably won't know as much about is David Edwards, who was a golfer back in the day, kind of those glory teams with for Plank and those guys. David's, I can't remember who was the older brother and who was the younger brother, but David and Danny both played at Oklahoma State around similar times. They grew up here in Oklahoma City, and just good guys. Was fortunate enough to interview, I believe it was Danny, whenever I was doing the 73rd hole. Great guy, had great stories from back in the day about hopping the fences and sneaking onto different golf courses here in Oklahoma City and stuff. And enjoyed hearing about the old Oklahoma State golf lore. So that's a pretty cool one too for any other Oklahoma State golf historians out there who love those old teams back whenever they were doing it. When Holder was just a young guy out there. So, some of the stories that Jim Woodward, Bob Tway, the Edwards, Scott Verplank, some of the Holder stories that those guys tell are incredible. So really, really fun times for Oklahoma State golf, and congrats to David Edwards on this honor as well.
Yeah, great list, great company, and very well deserved. I just love they're doing stuff like this. Like, it's a great way to honor former players in all sports. So I think it's a really cool deal, and congrats to those listed. Let's get to the Yuengling Toast of the Week, America's oldest brewery, brought to you by Yuengling. Be sure to find your local establishments where all Yuengling is sold. You can head over to OnCue, and your nearest gas station is carrying it now. So it's pretty ubiquitous across the state of Oklahoma. We appreciate Yuengling sponsoring the podcast as always. Check out the Flight or just the original lager. Hard to beat either of those two. Those are kind of my go-tos. So we appreciate Yuengling sponsoring the Toast of the Week. And Colby, what direction are you going?
I'm just going to continue to show some love to Oklahoma State softball. Just in general, they're 25-4 on the season, 6-1 still in conference play. And Kenny Gajewski just kind of has it rolling again. Last season, as we mentioned, did not end great. They got a win last night against BYU in Utah. They've got a 3-game series. And of course it starts on Thursday because you can't play on Sundays against BYU. So yeah, softball continues to keep it rolling. Lost to Tulsa on Tuesday. Those midweek games can be kind of tricky. Oklahoma State baseball has had some puzzling L's on Tuesday nights over the years as well. They got a win over Missouri State on Tuesday. So spring sports are in full swing, and Oklahoma State hopefully will get a sweep at BYU this weekend on the softball side. So Yuengling Toast of the Week to Kenny Gajewski and the softball girls who have it rolling once again.
Yeah, that's a good one. I'll give my toast to Dayton Fix, becomes the first 5-time All-American in Oklahoma State history. Probably won't be the Well, he might be the last. I guess the COVID year thing's going away, but he had to really eke it out. I mean, watching wrestling is just exhausting, Colby. I don't know how anyone can be like a wrestling parent. Like, I'm like shifting my weight, moving around in my chair, watching all these scrambles. And he finished 1 second short on riding time to win before going to overtime. It was a not a thrilling finish, but excruciating finish. But he did make All-American, and he's got a chance to go win that elusive individual national championship. But even if he doesn't, he's been, you know, one of the best OSU wrestlers in recent memory, and a well-deserved honor being a 5-time All-American.
Yeah, that's awesome. He's been around for a long time. In collegiate athletics, it's getting more and more rare for a guy to spend his entire career in one spot. So pretty cool for Dayton Fix and an Oklahoma State legend, no doubt.
Yep. I did ask for a few Twitter questions. We got a few. I only asked like 30 minutes before we hit record, so I didn't get a ton, but there is a great one here, and it ties into kind of what you mentioned earlier with your man Tony Bennett from Jacob Sturm. Would you rather watch Iowa football or Virginia in the NCAA tournament? What say you?
No, I'm good. Pass.
I think I would go with Virginia basketball over Iowa football, because Iowa football, I got to be outside where it's freezing cold and watch it for 4 hours versus basketball, which is a nice tidy 2 hours. So I got to go just with brevity there and go with Virginia, but both make your eyes bleed. And Colby, you sent me this tweet. A lot of people sent me this tweet. Thanks for passing it along. I love that this is my lane And what I'm known for most now is Iowa football. But there was a guy in the stands during that Virginia game saying Virginia basketball is Iowa football. And I thought that was just perfection. Give that man a toast as well.
Yeah, that's great. If you made me choose one, I actually think I might lean Iowa football, because in that instance, I can almost appreciate just how ugly and disgusting it is whenever you've got guys out there just slamming into each other in the cold on a Saturday morning at 11 o'clock. Just almost the pageantry of how ugly Iowa football is. I don't think there's any pageantry in what Virginia does. That kind of basketball should be illegal. And hopefully Tony Bennett changes it. And it, I mean, my dislike for Tony Bennett and Virginia basketball and the way they muddy up the game was so significant that I put Nico Medved in my top three on my list. So that's where I stand on Tony Bennett.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Sorry, I'm getting another email here.
Busy man. Very important. Very popular.
Yeah, you know, it's Friday, but I'm still working too during my lunch break. But a couple more questions here. We kind of did this from JW. Rank y'all's top three potential basketball coaching hires. Tell a little bit about why you believe each would succeed where others have failed. The only thing, you know, we kind of went through those lists, Colby. The only thing I would add is, you know, Steve Alford, I mentioned there was some smoke around him. He's got a really good resume. I mean, he makes the tournament. He wins 20 games. He's been to some Sweet 16s when he was at UCLA. He got Nevada back here. So just feels a little reach ready to me. He's getting up there in age as well. That's why I didn't include Alford, and he doesn't do much to excite me. But I think the difference why these coaches can succeed is, first off, I think Brad Underwood, to me, you see what he's doing at Illinois. Like, he was set up to succeed at Oklahoma State. He had already made the tournament his first year. I think they just have to hire the right guy, like a Brad Underwood. I think the two top candidates for us, Colby, I think would have success at Stillwater if they stuck around. I think that the difference for me is the coach themselves. That's the one thing that's been missing from Oklahoma State basketball. And I also posted this on the Chamber this week, Colby. Like, everyone just wants to hire like former players to be like assistants. Like, and I think Keaton Page is well liked. I think the next coach will probably look at keeping him. I think Marshall Scott's reiterated that on the Chamber as well. I just think a coach needs to come in here and hire his own dudes and start his own culture, start his own program. Eddie Sutton wasn't hiring guys who played under Paul Hansen to be his assistant. He hired legitimate coaches like Glenn Ciprian, like Kyle Keller. And they went, you know what they did, Colby? They coached those players' tails off. And every single year you watched Oklahoma State basketball, they would get better and better and better. And that's what they need. We don't need to just hire former players just so we have a familiar face on the bench. And if the former players are the best candidate to be an assistant, so be it. But you got to just start from scratch and let a proven coach come in here and do his own thing. So that's kind of my long-winded answer to a question we'd already been asked.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And I think that if you are hiring a coach because you love what he's done at his previous stop and you want him to bring that success to Stillwater, then you let him do it and you turn it over to him. I mean, you're hiring a guy. This is the CEO of the program. You let him make the decisions. I'm all good with that. And I'm totally with you. I just – Buzz Williams, Steve Alford, those guys, I'm just totally out on a retread. I just want to get an up-and-coming coach who's excited to be at this level, who's hungry to be at this level, who wants to put in the insane hours that it takes to succeed at this level because he's trying to make that name for himself. I don't need a guy that's been at this level for 20 years, 25 years, having, you know, success, but middling success. And it's not Coach K, somebody like that. It's just, I'm out on a retread.
Yep, I agree. From Cowboy Brad, favorite rides at Silver Dollar City. That's where I was for spring break. Went up to Branson with the girls. I tell you what, Colby, I must be out of practice because these rides were absolutely terrifying. I don't remember the last time I went on a roller coaster, but I was not mentally prepared for that. Maybe at my old age, I fear for my mortality more than when I was a kid, because I used to go to Six Flags as a kid and I'd ride those rides a million times if they let me. But went on Time Traveler first. That was absolutely harrowing. I didn't even know what I was getting on. And just there's no lead up at all. It just drops you and all of a sudden you're spinning and you're upside down. And that was pretty terrifying. But I'll go with Outlaw Run, the wooden roller coaster that has a corkscrew, which was also mildly terrifying, but also really fun. So had a good time there. And Cowboy Brad also asked why haven't many players entered the portal yet. I think they're kind of waiting to see what's going to happen with the head coaching position. I mean, there's a lot to be settled here, not only at Oklahoma State, but at other jobs because they're still playing.
Yeah, no doubt. I think that you'll see more of that once Oklahoma State makes the hire. Guys want to know. I mean, if you hop in the portal, there's no guarantee that you wind up at a better spot, and they might like the new guy. So I like that. I haven't been to Silver Dollar City. We go to Branson a decent amount. I really like Branson. I enjoy it. Haven't been to Silver Dollar City in a while. What's your overall Branson review? Some people think it's great, awesome. Some people think it's lame and for old people. I always have a good time when I go to Branson.
I had a great time. It's certainly a different part of the country. The mountains and the hills was really, really sweet. Played golf there one day.
Oh, where'd you play?
Point Royale is kind of where we were staying.
Okay. I have not played Point Royale. There's great golf up there. Big Cedar has the three courses out there where Tiger's at. And then in town, I've played Ledgestone, which is a phenomenal layout on the west side. There's like a 100-foot drop par three out there. And then Branson Hills is a great golf course as well. So I love Branson golf.
Yeah, we just played the one we were staying at. It was fine. It was good. It was good enough. I really enjoyed it. Like, of course, this trip is not for me. It's for the kids. But it was interesting. You know, they don't sell alcohol at Silver Dollar City, which I thought actually made it better in terms of an experience. It wasn't dirty. Like, I kind of commented this to the adults where I was like, I didn't notice any like trash laying around. I didn't notice any messes. Like, people were like respectful and cleaning up after themselves. You know, you go to some of those places, they're kind of gross. They're trashed out and they're just dirty. It was very clean, easy to get around. Now, we went on a Sunday. I think that helped with the crowds, but I was pleasantly surprised with the overall experience. You know, of course there's some lines. You got to wait in line just like anywhere else, but I really enjoyed it. It was clean and efficient. I'd go back.
Yeah, I enjoy Branson. We went a decent amount growing up. We just take a long weekend and go up there. We went last fall with my in-laws and took the baby. We'll probably go again when she's a toddler. They've got some fun kid things to do. And usually I play one round of golf whenever we're up there, and it's great golf and weather's usually nice. So yeah, I'm a big Branson guy for an easy, I mean, it's a 4.5-5 hour drive. You can spend 2-3 nights, 3-4 days, and you're in good shape. I think it's a perfect small vacation whenever you live this close.
Yep, I agree. Anything else before we get out of here?
Don't believe so. Who's your national championship? Who'd you pick to win it all?
Well, again, I haven't watched any of this. This is all just based on who people are picking versus their probabilities. I've got Arizona over Marquette in the national title game, just because I did have UConn get in the Final Four. I wanted to pick against them just because so many people were picking them, but they had like a 46% to make it to the Final Four. So the probability didn't outweigh the leverage there. Got Tennessee as my fourth Final Four team as well, but I have no confidence nor expertise on it. It's just, again, Rick Rungood does his bracket every year. He kind of diagrams it on YouTube if you're interested. And it's helped. Last year I was in like the 91st percentile. I'm still in the 89th despite losing an Elite Eight team already. Thanks a lot, BYU.
Oh yeah, I'm down in the 70s. My sister is in the 97th percentile, so she crushed it yesterday. That was awesome. I've got North Carolina over Creighton, and I believe I have Auburn coming out of UConn's region. Nice. I did no research. I clicked and I filled out what I thought was a pretty fun bracket. I only had one seed in the Final Four. And I had multiple, I think, double digit seeds in the Elite Eight, one of which I've already lost. Yeah, I filled out a very fun bracket, and yeah, just kind of rolling with it.
Yep. Good luck to everyone else. I also did like the old survivor pools, and BYU knocked me out. So thanks a lot again, BYU. So that's pretty brutal. But I have more fun with the survivor pools and squares now than the actual bracket, just because obviously the college basketball is not what it once was, sadly. But hey, maybe now, Oklahoma State basketball will get back to what it once was.
Right. Did you only have one entry for your survivor pool, or did you have multiple entries so you're still alive?
Just one, but you pick two on Thursday, two on Friday. You get both of those right. You pick one each day moving forward. But since I'm wrong, you got to pick four on Friday, which really hamstrings you moving forward. But you also have the chance on Friday, if you get knocked out that early, to, you know, just get an 8-9 game right, pick a 12. Like, I got New Mexico tonight. So, you can take a little more risk and still not be just drawing dead once all the teams are eliminated.
Yep, I like it. Good stuff. Everyone enjoy the tournament this weekend. Carson enjoyed it. Hopefully we'll be on standby next week for an emergency pod when a hire does take place. And hopefully the timing works out on that. Thanks everyone for listening. Enjoy the tournament. As always, go Pokes.